Hey there, welcome to LSAT Demon Daily. I'm Eric, and that's Reggie, a LSAT Demon student who just demolished the LSAT and is here to share his success story. Reggie, first off, congrats.
Thank you.
Let's not bury the headline. Tell me what just happened.
Yeah, so I just got my score back recently, and to my surprise, got a 180.
A 180.
Yeah.
Now, did you know when you took the test that you just totally crushed it and you were
No, you didn't
have that feeling?
No, there was a reading comp section that I was like, shit, like, I don't know if I did my best here. I actually was like, you know, you go through ebbs and flows of kind of what your score might be or what you think your score might be. At one point I was like, I probably got like a 169. So, okay. Yeah.
Questioning whether you should cancel your score.
Right.
Yeah. Well, mm-hmm. Let that be, I think, an important lesson to anyone who in the future didn't really think they did all that well and is wondering whether they should cancel or anything like that. Just wait until you see what the score is, because mm-hmm. we don't always know.
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay. Well, maybe we'll get into that in a little bit. Why don't we take a step backwards, start at the beginning. Brief overview of how you got started, like, or where you got started with the LSAT. Do you remember mm-hmm. a diagnostic that you took at the beginning?
So I don't remember like my very, very first diagnostic, because I actually started studying or looking into LSAT in high school. I like just really liked standardized tests, so I was kind of exploring. Law school was always an option for me, and so I looked into it pretty early. But the last diagnostic I could find was like on Khan Academy or something. It was a 159.
Okay.
That's the oldest test I could find. Yeah.
Cool. So 159. And then, so that was a while ago.
Yeah, that was in 2020, maybe.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Is that when you started studying? Has it just been a continuous period of mm-hmm. studying since then?
No, so that was a long time ago now, like 3 years. I have not been studying that whole time. I was really interested in it and like focused on it for a while after graduation and like COVID hit. And so I was kind of using that time to study. But then it was like on and off again. I wasn't really sure if I wanted to go to law school. So I started using 7Sage because it was recommended to me from a friend. And at first I really liked the idea of their syllabus and things like that, and like kind of taking the LSAT one step at a time and learning the fundamentals. I used it. I got burnt out with it and it just didn't really work for me. I was kind of plateauing in the 160s. And I actually burned out so much that I stopped studying completely. And then I picked it up maybe about in August this year, and I was listening to the Thinking LSAT podcast and the Demon Daily podcast, just kind of randomly. I don't even know how I discovered it. And I was listening and was like, I don't know if I believe what they're saying. Like, this kind of seems too good to be true.
What do you remember sounding too good to be true?
Well, like, okay, I remember that the idea of just like not reading the questions first seemed ridiculous to me. The idea of like turning off your clock and not worrying about the time at all was like, what? Like, I'm not going to do that. Like, that just doesn't make any sense. And I was like wary for some reason to even try the free like version of LSAT Demon, but I eventually did, and I was like, this is amazing. I love this. Yeah.
Cool.
So
What was it that you found appealing? What was it that you loved mm-hmm. about the LSAT Demon way of approaching the test?
Yeah. To me, it's just really intuitive. It's not complicated at all. Like, it is taking the test for what it actually is, which is a test of understanding and comprehension. It's not about like a logic language or formula or complicated ways of like looking at the types of games or the types of questions. It really took each or you with drilling, you can take each question, no matter what type of question it is, and just sit with it and understand that question. And even though it's only one question, it applies to a ton of other types of questions that you might come across. And I really liked that. And it pushed me into the 170s.
Nice. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I was going to ask, you'd mentioned feeling burnt out, feeling like you had plateaued in the 160s. Mm-hmm. What was it that got you out of that? Maybe those are different things. Mm-hmm. Or did you find that overcoming a feeling of burnout went mm-hmm. along? It went hand in hand with getting your score up, or was that
sure
kind of different process?
I think they were different. For burnout, it was the fact that I didn't even feel like I was going to complete the Seven Sage course, because there's so much. I think there's a new version out now or something, but there was so much content. And with the time at that point, I had a timeline and I was like, I kind of want to finish by this date. And I was like, this is going to take forever. And I couldn't even do with the goal that I had set. I couldn't really keep up with the day to day schedule. Yeah. And it was really boring. I was like, this isn't fun. I don't enjoy this. And so I was like, well, maybe like not that law school wasn't for me, but it's like, I'm not right now. And then I picked it up, I think, really just by hearing that going to law school for free was possible on the podcast, and kind of like buying into that. And then to break the 160 plateau, I think genuinely it was the classes that got me there, like doing the live classes. I know that some of the ones that I took were like Ala's reading class. I believe I took your reading class. And also Worlds and like Circle Slash. Those things really helped me perfect my games, which was a huge bump. And I'm trying to think if there was anything else specifically. I wonder just like tips. Like
yeah, I wonder if you think of yourself, mm-hmm. you know, on test day when you got a 180, and just how it was that you were thinking about and approaching the test mm-hmm. compared to you when you were in the 160s, mm-hmm. is there something that comes to mind that differentiates those two test takers?
Yeah, I think the first test taker is someone who was like scared of the test, who was a little bit felt like not necessarily defeated, but knew that the test was made to trick you, but not really realizing exactly how to call the test out on its bullshit, if that makes sense. And I'm uh-huh. like, yeah. And I kind of approached the questions with hope. And you shouldn't do that. Yeah. I think when I took it this time, it was really a... like I walked in with like some bravado, with some confidence, and I was like, this test is easy. It's understandable. It's learnable. And really being critical of the questions on LR, or not the questions, of the passages in LR, mm-hmm. and then also the answer choices, and really not being afraid to just completely disregard answer choices that didn't make any sense. And with RC, I think in the past I was also scared of the passages, and so you kind of just rush through them, which is the opposite of what you should do. And I went into it with like an interest, trying to feign an interest in whatever they were talking about, but also being critical and engaging with the passage itself before moving to the questions. I also think I was just a lot more relaxed because I always turned off the clock and time as much as I wanted it to be. It was a little bit of a factor, just a tiny bit, but I was able to kind of put that aside. And it didn't give me as much anxiety as it tended to earlier.
Yeah. And I love that you acknowledge that even on your best day, that awareness of the clock is still there. It's still there a little bit. Of course it is. It was for me as well when I was, you know, and probably still to this day is mm-hmm. when I'm teaching classes and literally there's no clock, I'm still a little bit of me is thinking, oh, students are judging me for how long it's taking me to explain this question. So mm-hmm. it's always there. But yeah, there's no such thing as perfection, and you acknowledge it and then say, okay, but still, I'm good at this test, and I've got that little bit of bravado, like you said. So that's great.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite section?
I really like games, and I'm so sad that they're leaving.
Me too.
Yeah, the games was so much fun. Like, even with the prospect of teaching LSAT in the future, like, I was like, I really hope I get to teach games at some point. But yeah. Other than that, LR, I think, because I think that was the one I was always naturally good at.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you mentioned teaching. You were a part of the Ask Button team, right?
Yeah, I was lucky enough to do that. Mm-hmm.
Tell me a little bit about that. Mm-hmm. You were doing that while you were studying, right?
Yeah, so it wasn't something that I even knew was a possibility, but then I scored my first 170 or above on a practice test, and I got a little message, and I was like, oh, this is cool. What is this? And it was basically an opportunity to join the Ask Button Heroes, which allows you to answer Ask Button questions from other students, which I thought was really cool. And I definitely jumped on the opportunity to do that. And being able to teach questions pushed me from like maybe scoring a 170 or a 171 to high 170s. Like not instantly, but it really helps you understand the question even more than you would from the perspective of a test taker. Mm-hmm. And I think that makes sense. When you have to teach a concept, it's like a, I think a known study strategy is like teach a concept to someone who doesn't know anything about it. And hopefully that will help you learn more about it. But in this case, we have students who at least know something about the LSAT. So it's a little bit like, I think, easier. but yeah, so being able to kind of transfer the skills that you know, because you know that you can do well in the test, and explain that to someone else, no matter what question they have, is, I don't know, it was really helpful for me.
Oh, absolutely. Teaching is a great way at getting better at something, a great way to learn. I'm sure I'm better at the LSAT now than I was when I took the test, just because I've had a couple years of teaching.
Yeah.
Thinking back on your time as an Ask Button hero, any really big topics that you would see come up from time to time? Were there any common issues or errors that you sort of noticed coming up in the questions that you would get? Any big themes? Yeah, I guess that's a long-winded way of asking, any big advice that you found yourself giving time and again that maybe listeners of this pod would want to know?
Yeah. To be honest, I can't think of any at the moment. It seemed like, to me, every question was really unique. Like, they did, I'm sure, spoke to a larger concept of whatever section they were asking about, but I can't connect any of those dots right now. It always seemed like I was going in and really, like, surgically analyzing that specific question. Sometimes it would take me, like, 20, 30 minutes just to write out an explanation for a fairly simple question, because that's kind of how I am. I'm pretty, I don't know. I'm not a perfectionist, but when I'm explaining something, I tend to over explain.
Sure.
Just because I really want someone to understand. But I can't make any of those connections overall. I do have like general tips, things that I got from the demon, but absolutely, I don't think that they were specifically from Ask Button.
Yeah. So what are some of the, maybe imagining, someone listening to this podcast who is in the middle of their own LSAT journey, are there a couple biggest lessons or biggest pieces of advice that you would give to someone?
Yeah. My biggest pieces of advice usually, is look at the question at all, no matter what section you're on, before engaging with the prompt. As crazy as that sounds, and treat the prompt as, if it's RC at the very least, treat it like it's your best friend, and that the questions and the answer choices are your worst enemy. And you really want to engage as much as you can with the passages and read them for understanding, sentence by sentence, line by line, and really be critical. That's where the, that's really where the test sits. It's not in answering the questions, I feel. It's really with engaging and comprehending the passages. That's my biggest tip. Other one, of course, is turn off the clock. Don't worry about time. If you are working on familiarizing yourself with each question and just like kind of how to take the test through drilling, which is untimed, and you get to spend as much time as you want on any one question, you can kind of apply that to taking the exam. I kind of look at the exam as one question at a time and not really thinking about how many questions or passages are left. And you tend to get faster that way. So, you know, like the founders say, slow down to speed up. It's really true.
I think if I was to give a couple pieces of advice, it would be the same thing. Mm-hmm. So well said. I'm interested by your saying that you enjoy standardized tests.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly enjoy the LSAT. I maybe have either less memory or less experience with other standardized tests, but probably that statement strikes some people as odd.
Yeah.
What do you like about standardized tests?
Sure.
And what about the LSAT is different, or mm-hmm. or is it like how do you see the LSAT within the larger cosmos of testing?
This is pretty vain, I think, but the reason that I like standardized tests is I like comparing myself to other people. I'm big on competition. Like, I'm very competitive.
Yeah.
And so whether it's with myself or others, but whenever, like, even in elementary school, you just kind of like take those nationwide exams or whatever, and they're just trying to see where you're at.
Where they're like, it's not about you, it's about testing the school.
Right,
and you're like, yeah, bullshit. I know what tests are. Come on.
Yeah. And like, it doesn't matter what those, like what you get, but I was always really happy when I was like in the top like 90%, or usually, this is a flex, but usually like, and these are like fourth grade, so it doesn't matter. But I would get like 99th percentile in reading or whatever. And same with SAT. I actually didn't do stellar on my SATs. Like, I did well, but I didn't do as well as I expected. But the prospect of kind of having a name to, or not a name, a number to go by you always felt good to me. It sounds really elitist and like fucked up a little bit, but that it's just like a personal thing. The LSAT is different, I think, from a lot of other standardized tests, because it's not about it's not really a knowledge test, if that makes sense. It's not something that, of course, you can study for, but it's not something that you can memorize. It's more of a skills test, if that makes sense. You have to kind of learn the LSAT. You can be good at reading comprehension and do really well at the LSAT, but I think you actually have to learn the LSAT as a test itself, as like the material. And that makes it really different.
Yeah, I like to think of it as training more than studying.
Yeah.
Because you're right, it is a skills test, and it's thankfully one that, whereas the stuff on the SAT you might not use throughout the rest of your life, being able to read well, you definitely will.
Yep.
So I encourage students to take solace in that. If it feels like a grind and it feels like it's really difficult to make progress, it's because you're actually building a lifelong skill.
Yeah.
And that's great.
Yep.
Cool. So what's next for you? You mentioned, it sounds like law school's maybe up in the air. You're not applying this cycle, but what's going on in your future application cycle?
Yeah. So I currently work at a public defender agency. So I'm planning on keeping that job and trying to actively talk to attorneys and learn more about different fields of law. Like you said, I don't plan on applying this cycle. I'm going to wait until next cycle at the very least. It might be longer than that. I'm not sure. I'm going to do my research into different schools, put my personal statements together, kind of take my time with it, though. And Let's see what else. I mean, I want to work with the demon, maybe get some tutoring in there. I have this dream actually of moving into a van and working remotely as a demon teacher.
Being an itinerant LSAT instructor.
Yeah, that's so funny. Who knows? Maybe that'll happen. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. Well, Reggie, thanks so much for coming on. It's been a pleasure. Congratulations and well Thank done you. Once again on your 180. And thank you on behalf of all the other LSAT Demon students who you helped out with your work as an Ask Button hero. I know it helped you to get a little bit better at the test, but I'm sure it also helped a lot of LSAT students along the way. So thanks for that.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Well, email daily at lsatdemon.com if you'd like to ask us a question or share some LSAT or law school admissions news. Thanks for listening.